Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning and welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran. It's great to be with you today. And today I have a wonderful gift and a blessing to be able to interview two women, not just two women, two Catholic women. No, wait a minute. Two Catholic wives and mothers and founders and, let's see, I think it's a chief librarian and it's an assistant to the chief librarian, or is it an assistant chief librarian? I'm not sure. The office can help us get clear on that. But today I'm going to have the wonderful gift of interviewing Amanda Downing and Rebecca Miller to talk about 2-acre books. Parents, you're going to love this, especially those of you that are responding to the call to raise and educate your kids, maybe at home, maybe in homeschooling or co-op, or maybe even just wanting to complement and supplement the education they have. That's what we're going to explore today on the program. Back in a minute.
Hi, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and you know me as the host of Sound Insight. I am also letting folks know that as a realtor licensed in the state of Washington and in Idaho, I love serving Catholic families and others who are discerning a move for yourselves. It's much more than buying or selling a home. It's discerning a whole new life. If that's something that you would find a help in, if I could be of service to you, please be in touch. You can find out more at drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to start with a prayer, and then I'm going to welcome onto the program Rebecca and Amanda. Let's get started. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Lord our God, thank you and praise you for the gift to be parents and to raise our kids in the faith. Lord, I just pray that you give us the wisdom and the discernment to know what to do and to have the courage to take steps, especially, Lord, when it comes to forming our kids to appreciate what is true and good and beautiful in this world through the gift of reading. And so, Lord, I just pray that parents would be encouraged and inspired by what they hear today. And we make this prayer in Jesus' holy name. Amen. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Well, let me welcome to the program officially and formally Rebecca Miller and Amanda Downing. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you.
Oh, I like you did that in unison. That was really good. Very well done. You guys always lock in lockstep like that, always just totally in agreement, smiling. And
that's right. We've been working together a long time.
We have.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, I want to hear about that. So you guys are the, I asked, what are your titles? And I said, are you founders? And Rebecca, you said a cute title, founder and chief librarian. And I threw in the assistant to the chief librarian. Amanda, is that your title?
I think we're kind of dual chief librarians.
Librarians, yeah. On our, yeah, business card.
And then we have all of our junior librarians who help us.
Yes, those are our children. They're the assistant librarians.
Nice. Well, if there are a lot of chiefs, you need some Indians, right? So you need some. Everybody can't be the boss. So
you know what? I will take. Well. I'll take the assistant. I'll be the assistant.
Yeah.
Well, you did.
I don't know if you caught my reference to the TV show The Office, where Dwight always wanted to have the title of, what was it, assistant manager, and or it was something like that, and it was assistant to the manager.
Assistant to the manager, yeah.
Yeah, it was cute. All right, we're here to talk about something that's not cute, but it's actually quite important, and something that is really near and dear to my heart, and I sincerely want some guidance, because I'm going to launch with a story that just bothers me. It bothers me, and it's about books. It's about one of the greatest books that's impacted my life. I think you might have heard of it. It's called The Lord of the Rings. So this trilogy I discovered late. I was late to the party. I didn't discover it until college. And once I read it, I started to reread this trilogy, this set of three very meaty books, at least every 2 or maybe 3 years, probably more often, and I would reference the book. I would have them on all marked up because of the themes that were put forward in those books so powerfully. And the thing that bothers me is that now my kids have to read these books in school, and they consider it a heavy burden and a chain, and they can't wait to be done with The Lord of the Rings. I need a solution there. I don't know. It's like, what is it about learning to love a book and learning to love great literature, and somehow context matters. Somehow it's, if it's an assignment versus it's a discovery, there's something really different about how kids can relate to books. How's that for jumping into the deep end?
No, you're very right, though. You know, I can't speak for Rebecca entirely, but I had kids who were reluctant readers in general when we were starting out on our education journey. And one of the things I realized is that they had to fall in love with story. They had to understand that the book is the story. And so to that, I mean, I just started reading aloud to my kids a lot. And that kind of helped them to get to the point. I mean, I still read aloud to them. They're 15 and almost 16. And we still, when we have breaks and summer, and we still do family read aloud, and I'll do two or three a summer. And, you know, they've changed over the years, but I really think, just to get your kids to understand that the book is the story. And if they love the story, they'll just dive into the book. But motivation is there too. Like, are they being made to read it, or do they get to read it? It's true.
And yeah. It is harder the older they get, I found. And, you know, we've homeschooled our kids through eighth grade, and then they've gone to a private high school for their high school years. And, you know, it's just busier, I think, when they're teenagers and out in school and sports and all the other things. So, you know, we hope all those seeds that they planted, even if for a period of their life, they might not be coming home diving into all the books as I would like them to unwind at night. They're reading a lot of hard stuff at school too. But hopefully they can come back to that, you know, as they have time and as they grow. And every once in a while, there might be a little bribery involved too. So might be, you know, $20 bill at the back of a book that we've given up.
That
might have happened before. I'm not sure.
Incentives are not a bad thing. Carrie is all into incentives that, you know, when you give a kid something that they value at the other end of something that you value, yeah, they'll get through the thing you value to get to the thing they value. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They come to value the thing you value too, right?
Win-win-win.
So, brilliant.
But a lot of it too, I mean, I think it's just our culture today and the progression of, you know, the history of books and the libraries and how everything's more flashy now. The literature has been dumbed down. I mean, it's really hard, I think, for children, even for adults, to really appreciate some of these older classics and some of the language and the stories. It's hard for our attention spans to dive into that sometimes and even give it a chance when we're used to a lot of, you know, shorter, flashier.
Well, and then the adrenaline things that they produce if it's an exciting book. Like some of these older books, there's, you know, the value isn't in every twist and turn and exciting thing that happens in the book. It's just the story and the journey. And so if you've got a kid who just, you know, loves some of these crazy action books that, I mean, we have some of these in our library too. Mm-hmm. There's a place for them. But if that's all they're reading, then it kind of, it just, they don't have a taste and the, I don't want to say the capacity, but they don't have the patience maybe to sit through a book that's a slower pace, but still would have like an amazing story. They just are anxious for the sword fights and whatnot.
All right. So Amanda and Rebecca, you've identified two really big pain points, which I think beautifully sets up 2 Acre Books as a solution. Those two pain points are, okay, here I am. I'm a parent. I've got young kids. I want them to access great books, books that can meaningfully impact their lives, shape how they think and see the world, et cetera. But a lot of the stuff that is coming at them, not only in book form, but in the various forms of media and the internet, where do I go? Where do I start? How do I overcome that? That's the first thing. And then the second thing is, okay, if I want to get started and bring them into a journey where they're going to engage with some, let's call it classics, you know, some of the classics are just great literature that will really wash over them and soak into them. Where do I even begin? And in a certain sense, that just enters through the door. Let's climb out of the pool and let's talk about, well, you've got a problem, we've got a solution. And it sounds like Two Acre Books was about helping create a solution for parents. But So for folks who don't know, and I'm guessing there aren't going to be that many folks listening who are familiar with 2 Acre Books, talk about what it is, and then I want to hear the story of how it got started and how it's developed.
Yeah. Well, we call ourselves a private lending library for discerning families. And we really, you know, we're physical library.
For discerning families. That was, that sounds like a Devin thing. I don't know if it doesn't sound like a Rebecca thing. That sounds like...
Workshop that for a while.
That's good. I think that's really cool for discerning families, because that's a double entendre. Like, I'm throwing out some French now, right? So there's a double meaning to discerning there, right? Both the spiritual meaning and also that sense of I have a sense of discretion around what's really actually quite valuable. So please, I interrupted your beautiful mission statement that you're a private lending library for discerning families, but please continue.
Yes, no, that's okay. Do you want to explain more about the library as a whole, and then I can
We're a physical library where you can come and browse our collection. It's housed in my basement, which is finished. It's like a library.
Cozy.
And we have in the range of 6,000 books that people can check out. We also, in addition to our regular collection, we have curated book boxes that are based around a main book, and they have supporting books that echo the themes in it. And those are very popular. They go out monthly to subscribers here locally. We really are only lending in the local at this point. I know that there have been people who have wished we could do it.
Ship them books,
but it gets hard for two homeschooling moms to track all that. So that's kind of our physical library. We have library days each month where people come and bring their kids and can have a real true library experience where they, you know, they can feel that all the books on the shelves are vetted and fairly safe. We still have some, you know, there's definitely books that are geared more toward older kids than younger kids, and sometimes we have to help steer kids that way. But generally speaking, the vast majority of our books have been vetted in several levels, so that you can come and feel good about letting your kids just pick any book off the shelf.
And Tom, what you brought up earlier too of how to get kids excited about reading, kind of discovering the books for themselves. I think there's a lot of value. There's a lot of value in a home library. And I know a lot of people have extensive collections of their own, and that's great. And their kids have selection, but there is something to coming to a different place and really letting the kids browse the shelves, explore, kind of discover these things on their own, that creates some excitement around reading. And we even had one family at our last library, same library. It was in Seattle for several years, and then we moved to Spokane. And she was really struggling with her preteens reading. They were just reluctant. They wouldn't pick up the books. So she got a membership for a year, and they would come over and they were picking books off the shelf. She goes, "We have these books at home. They're sitting on our shelf, but they'd want to read it if it was on mom's shelf." They were so excited to come and discover these books on their own, and they would check them out, and you know, that just helped get over the hump to the point they could go back and, you know, read all these amazing books their mom had collected at home. So part of,
you know, what's really neat. I would step in on that, because as you were talking, both of you, about the importance of a physical space to come to that is a library, I went back to the town I grew up in my mind, and I started remembering how much I enjoyed like the treasure hunt of going through the shelves and looking for a book. And then I'm like, wait a minute, Owls, the bookstore, the famous used bookstore in Portland. It's like, that's like a shrine to me, right? You go there and the theology section is huge. And it's just like, and just going through and looking for a treasure to discover. I'm like, yeah, brilliant. I never thought of that. That is brilliant. The idea of get your kids out of your home and the shelves that are seeing the books all the time, and let them go on a treasure hunt in a in a library that you know is safe. That's brilliant. Where did that come from? Who came up with that brilliant notion? I love it.
Kind of how it started, because we were taking our kids to the public libraries. I really wanted that experience for them. And just over and over again, the books they were picking, for the younger kids, they would just pick, they weren't morally objectionable. It was just the flashiest, shiniest. It was the Barbie and the Junkie. My Little Pony. And I just didn't want to keep reading these over and over. You know, kids just want to read the same book over and over. I'm like, I don't want to spend my time on these books with you. And then by the time they were reading into chapter books, the first time one of my older daughters, she picked out like 15 chapter books. She was so excited at the public library. We had them all stacked up. I said, you know, I'm going to have to approve these before you check them out. And there was not a single one I was comfortable taking home. She had gravitated to all like the gothic, the dark, she loves fairy tales, we found out later. And she was crushed. She was absolutely crushed I didn't want them in our home. They weren't appropriate for her to read. And after that, that kind of started sparking there's got to be something else out there.
In addition, we were finding, so we lived next door to each other for 4.5 years and homeschooled alongside each other. And we were both just finding ourselves very frustrated, trying to find the books that we wanted to use within our homeschooling life as well. They're just harder to find because they're out of print or just old in general. And I had a similar experience to Rebecca. And I think we both started to realize that these books that we wanted maybe had once been at the library, but were being sold because they were making room for the newer books. You know, there's only so many shelf inches in your library. And so the primacy of place goes to usually the newest and most popular, which sadly, a lot of these books are not that we wanted did not mm-hmm. fall into that category anymore. So we were already looking through library sales that would happen on the weekends and, you know, sharing books back and forth between the two of us. We collected quite a few just in our homeschooling. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
I was wondering, I was like, how do you go from a desire to say, oh, you know, we want them to be able to go to a library and do some, you know, the discovery, the treasure hunt. And yeah, we have a library of 6,000 books that have, you know, sorted through all the criteria and they're going to be great books. There it is. Ta-da.
So a couple of things happened all around the same time where it went from, yes, this desire to, oh my gosh, we have an actual business and venture around this. So one of them, there was two separate book sale events that actually the first one, I mean, I have 7 kids now, but I had littles and my dad, I had heard about this book sale. It was a Catholic school that was closing and selling all their books. So I sent him to go look at the books for me because I didn't have time to leave the house. I said, Dad, go look and call me if there's any good ones. He comes home. He's like, oh, I just bought them all. I was like, you can do that? They were about $1 a book or $2 a book. It was donation. It's like, yeah, I just bought all of them. And that was maybe 300 books at the time. And then sometime in that same year, there was another family that was
done homeschooling.
They had this big sale. And just through, I think, providential circumstances, we ended up being kind of the only ones there. And I'm looking through going, wow, these are really good books. And same thing. My dad was with me. He goes, well, let's just make them an offer and buy their collection. Okay. he's been an entrepreneur and had businesses, and same with my husband. It kind of runs in the family.
And so Rebecca, don't let her leave herself out. They are incredibly talented and just so good at finding a problem that they can solve with a business. And they just are so full speed ahead. I am in awe all the time. And this is why I'm the assistant. I just like hop on the back and ride along.
Well, thank you.
That's really cool.
That happened and we went, you know, just increased our collection by about 3,000 books from those two events. And simultaneously, Amanda and I had been listening to these podcasts on home education. And one of them, one of the ladies, she actually runs a private lending library. And so she had a podcast about that and about how she does it, how she runs it. And that really, it's like, oh, people do this. So I had my dad listen to it. I said, Dad, you want to help me with this? I've got this business idea. And I talked to Amanda, who was next door, and both of our husbands were on board. So we decided we would go for it and really Our husband's helped a lot. I mean, Amanda's husband does a lot with branding and marketing. And so they helped us get our website, do all the business side. We've had a ton of support from our parents collectively with babysitting mostly, so we could do this and, you know, offer this service. So,
well, and in the midst too, it was like we realized that we could not possibly be the only people out there who were having these frustrations. And so, you know, there is definitely a ministerial side to what we do here. We want to be a resource for these people who are just feeling like there is no resource.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Again, I'm talking with Amanda Downing and Rebecca Miller, and they are the co-founders and co-chief librarians of 2 Acre Books, a private library for discerning families. And they mean that in both senses of the word. You've done all the heavy lifting, ladies. You've done all the heavy lifting. You've gathered together this collection of over 6,000 books so far, and you've made it accessible for folks to come walking around. And right now the library is physically located on the South Hill of Spokane. So it's typically going to be accessible for folks in this area. Who knows? You might have some people making Powell-like trips out to the library, right?
Yeah, I will say, I guess the next level of how this has evolved is we actually have partnered with a family in Idaho, North Idaho, who kind of similar mission. She had a huge private collection and was lending informally. And we met her at our homeschool co-op. And so we're actually helping them start their own kind of official branch of the library for folks that are in Northern Idaho. And it's a little bit of a drive to Spokane.
We have had some dedicated members who do drive out every month, though, mm-hmm. To come and visit the library here. But I know that there are many, many more people over there in that area, the Coeur d'Alene Post Falls area, who would love to be able to, but just it is a commitment to drive the 30 to 40 minutes, we understand.
For sure. So I'm going to give you a little secret. This is just between us, okay? So the way that I got most of the sort of classic works wasn't by buying them one at a time. It was through a seminary professor that was retiring. And he's like, I'm just going to give all my books to the library. And I'm like, can I have them? He said, absolutely. And I ended up with 9 boxes of the entire history of this priest's books and class notes, and are amazing, right? But that leads to the second one, which is, as you know, Catholic libraries at universities will often shed books. And depending on who's in charge, the books they're shedding are classics. They're just amazing. So you probably already know all this, but that has been a second source for me to get good books. Now I'm actually giving away the secrets. Dang, I'm going to miss out on all of these really wonderful treasures. And the third one is sometimes Catholic institutions are shutting down. And so I was working with one and they were shutting down, and they had an entire library downstairs in their basement. And I'm like, what are you going to do with it? And they're like, we're just going to get rid of it. I said, can I take some things? Take anything you want. I'm like,
that's amazing.
Private access to this whole library to take what I wanted. And crazy thing. And then I'm going to let this bridge to you guys. That's where I got the copies of the Summa Theologica, Thomas Aquinas's 3 volumes that I've been praying with, writing in, and impacting my life for over 20 years now, because I happened to be in the right place at the right time and was able to access those types of books. So I want to talk about this. So again, Rebecca Miller and Amanda Downing, the founders of 2 Acre Books, this private library, I want to hear a story about impact. Like, I'm sure that, you know, you're having kids come through with parents that are, you know, homeschooling, co-op, or even just, you know, parents who have a concern about what their kids are accessing. Can you think of a story of, I have to tell you what happened when my kid went home and read that book, or we read it aloud, and this, how do I ever thank you? I'd love to hear one of those how do I ever thank you stories.
Well, we definitely have had a lot of grateful moms, especially we would regularly get pictures of their kids sitting in nooks and crannies of the house, just curled up with books. And it was like, this has never happened before.
And with kind siblings, with older siblings, ones, yes, reading to little ones.
Yeah.
I still get pictures from some of the families in Seattle that were members while we were over there, of especially it's the older kids reading to the younger kids pictures that are just so touching. We had some mom come to tears in our library one time because her kid had never been in a library before and he was young, but being able to pick books off the shelf. And she was just so grateful because that was kind of like you were saying, Tom, her childhood experience, and she didn't feel comfortable bringing him into the public libraries and was just, I think that was very impactful for her. And then I guess just on a more general impact level, I mean, just to watch the kids that come month over month, just kind of grow in their confidence in choosing books and their parents and exploring different areas of the library that, you know, we have some books like, I don't know who's ever going to check that one out, you know, where we try to cover all the different topics and, you know, some kid will pull that off the shelf and just really enjoy it and come back for another one. And it's just neat to see, you can see that the sparks kind of connected for them.
I think one of our members over in Idaho, she was an early subscriber to our boxes. Busy mom, three kids, all young. The oldest, super precocious, very bright, reading level, like, I don't know, three grades above. So here's this tiny little slip of a kid who wants to read these giant books. And she, of course, was feeling so out of her depth, just feeling like, I cannot pre-read all these books. I can't do that for him to make sure he's being safe. So she just, you know, she felt bad because she was saying no a lot of the time, like, I can't get to that right now, read these other books that I know are okay. And so when they started getting our book boxes, it was like 20 books a month, here you go, read all these books, all these different levels. And this was one of those situations where then he was reading to younger siblings, and it was just a real, real blessing for them. So that is kind of magical to hear about.
Yeah.
Well, I've got several. Now you've got me. I've got like a whole host. It kind of shook the snow globe there. I've got several questions that just kind of come blurting out. So the first one is, there are going to be some parents listening to this who are going to say, okay, help me understand the difference between giving my kid access to the latest, greatest adventure book or sci-fi or, you know, that adrenaline rush type book and the types of classics that you're talking about. Help parents understand what is the difference and why it matters, accessing the kind of books that they will in a library like yours.
So the books that we have in our library, we would classify the vast majority of them, if not every single book, as a living book. And this phrase comes from Charlotte Mason, who was an educator in England in, I think, the 1800s.
Yeah.
And really this, there's a beautiful acronym that Emily Kaiser, who was the lady who had the podcast called The Delectable Education, and she's the one that has her own library. She came up with this, and I mean, I don't think we can improve upon it. So we just asked if we could use it in trying to explain to people kind of what is a living a living book.
And how we filter the books that come into the library.
Yeah. So the acronym is LIVING, LIVING. So the L is for literary power. So books that use language well and strongly, and, you know, the authors that are writing these are real master craftsmen of words. And so, you know, it lives in the mind. You instantly see a picture of what you're reading because the words are so well crafted. Mm-hmm.
Ideas, they're planting, you know, ideas into your head and your soul,
yeah,
I guess, as you're reading them.
Virtue is the V. So they would have characters that display strong virtuous qualities that, you know, then your children are wanting to emulate, or the reader's wanting to emulate. That doesn't mean that all the characters are virtuous or that all their actions are virtuous, but in reading these books and seeing these characters, your child who's reading that them really would see
a clear distinction
between what is good and what is evil and right and wrong, and even feel like the sense of injustice when the character makes a poor decision, but then to see them struggle, you know, there's value in all of that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, inspiring. So a author is passionate about what he's writing about, and even stories on, you know, bland subjects. There's a Living Science book on ants and aphids that, you know, it was so inspired reading. I never thought about, I could be excited reading about, you know, ants and aphids before, but you read this stuff, you're like, oh my goodness, like, wow, that is, I never thought about it that way. Narrative. So a lot of times, you know, it's written in a story format. It doesn't have to be narrative. A lot of, again, back to science books, you know, there might be more information, but it's presented in a way that you can follow. It's not just splashing facts across the page.
And then the G is generational. So, you know, the books that we would classify as living are often the classic books that you would know about, but they're enjoyed by all ages, you know, across cultures. They've stood the test of time. You know, it's no accident that they're considered classic works. We don't, you know, when you think about like Jane Austen, like we don't go to formal balls and, you know, have all of the social conventions that they have, but there's this kind of underlying human condition that we can all relate to. So, you know, works like that, just they become classic because they are so relatable on levels. C.S. Lewis had a great quote, and I'll probably not do it justice, but it was something to the effect of no book is really worth reading at the age of 10, which is not worth reading at the age of 50. And any that you should outgrow, you probably should never have read in the beginning. That was a terrible quotation of it, but the idea is there.
That's got me thinking, but I love the acronym, a living book. And as you were saying that, I began to think about things around, like, how have books impacted me, right? Beyond just learning. So I had the wonderful gift of studying at, it was called the North American College in Rome. It's a diocesan seminary. And one of the larger than life characters was the chief librarian, Brother Randall Reedy. And what a great name, Reed, right? Reedy for a librarian. And so one of the customs was, after you finished your pranzo, your lunch, and you took a little giro, a little walk around the campus, you'd go by the library into his main office area and have a cup of tea as he waxed eloquently. And he became famous for this list of 100 books, because he would often get asked the question, what book do you recommend? What book do you recommend? And he came up with this famous list of 100 books that anyone who wants to call themselves cultured should have read. You cannot call yourself a cultured person. And that doesn't mean, you know, highfalutin. It just means a person of cult, a person who is radiating the essence of the good and true and beautiful of their culture, of a society. And so we would grab the list, and I started, I'm going to work my way through this list. And I got to tell you, the effects of these great books, and this is all English literature, he limited it to English literature. And so obviously, you know, you've got like the collected works of William Shakespeare. That covers a whole bunch right there. That's more than one. But I can remember the effect of like reading David Copperfield and understanding the meaning of a father's love. And I got it through reading David Copperfield, or the sense of heroism that you could get in A Tale of Two Cities, right? That's just Charles Dickens. But then, you know, you want to be impacted in your life, right? Read Mark Twain. And I'm not talking about Huckleberry Finn. I mean, read that. That's a great book too. But I'm talking about read Joan of Arc.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You are going to be impacted by reading about that girl. I mean, I'm kind of getting kind of stirred just thinking about the effect of reading that book. And so this then leads me to part two, which is, I remember when they were turning The Lord of the Rings into movies, and I was talking about it with the priest, and he said, I'm not going to watch the movies, and I'm not going to watch any trailers or any video clips, because these characters live in my mind. They live in my imagination, and they've walked with me in life. And I don't want to have my image of Frodo and Sam and Aragorn spoiled by the immersive presentation that happens in the movie. And so right. I wish I'd never seen them, because my Aragorn was way more gruff and big, larger than life, manly, than the guy that played him in the movies. And poor Sam is ruined for me because of the character, the guy they chose to be. Some 35-year-old guy who's trying to act like a young hobbit. I'm like, this isn't working. This is not doing it for me. So there's something about the power of the imagination that gets fostered and formed when you attend to a book and you wrestle with it. All right, am I exaggerating here or what?
No, not at all. You know, there's a reason people say the book is always better, and it's because you do have that freedom and that creativity to build the world in your mind. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I've even had kids that can't go between the audiobook and the regular book because of the names. You know, they have all those names in their head, and Mom, that's going to just throw me off if I, you know, switch whichever version they were reading.
Oh, sorry.
That's actually a great point. I didn't even think of that, because some of the pronunciations I had in my mind were different than when I heard it pronounced, which again was jarring. It was somewhat jarring.
Yeah.
Okay. I have two things. The first is I want to make sure that folks have a chance to learn how to access what you offer at 2 Acre Books, because it is a lending library. And you talked about the idea of being able to physically come by, see the library, take books off the shelf. But I want to learn more about this box of books. This monthly subscription aspect of things. And you've also done a bit of a traveling show up. I was teasing you guys that you were selling stuff out of the back of your car after mass one day. I was like, is this contraband goods here? What are you, the police are on their way. You better pack up what you're selling. So talk a bit about how folks access these books. And then I want to hear more about the box of books.
Yeah. So
our library is a membership library. So, we have understanding and agreement with the families that come to our library. They understand our take on books. And
So they basically, through our website, they can apply for membership that way. And we'll follow up and try to, you know, help figure out what's the best kind of route for them. So the full library access, both Spokane and Dalton Gardens, those are both open right now, one day a month, for families to come and browse. The curated book boxes has been really, really popular, especially for...
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out, drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com. Okay, back to Sound Insight.
And before you do that, tell me the website. I want to make sure that I can reference that a few times. Oh, so what's the website?
2acrebooks.com.
I'll spell that.
That is challenging to remember there, folks. But no, the challenging part, T-W-O, 2acrebooks.com. 2acrebooks.com. Great. That's easy. All right. Great. I love it. Someone simple like me, 2acrebooks.com gets that. That gets it done. Okay. So they can come, and as you said, there are right now two branches to the library, one on the South Hill of Spokane, about 6,000 plus books there, and that's where you guys are right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the Dalton Gardens, there's another library that they can access about one day a month. And you're saying like families can show up if they have a membership, right? So they've got to sign up for a membership first.
And they can come visit as long as we know they're coming. So if they reach out, say, hey, I'm interested in your library, they can definitely come, you know, check it out, visit beforehand to see if it's a good fit for them. And then once they're a member, they can come, you know, every month. They have access to all the books. And then separately, the curated book boxes, there's about 12 to 15 books in each box. We have ones for preschool age and ones for elementary age. And those are great. Some people come to our library to pick those up, but we have a lot of families at one particular church. So once a month on a Sunday, we just bring a, that's what you saw, the trunk of Amanda's van full of book boxes. And then after mass, people could come and, you know,
they give us their old
swap
box.
It out.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, if there is a lot of people in one location, we did it in Seattle as well. We'll kind of find a time to come to them and they can swap books that way if they can't make it to the library. And then I guess the last thing I just wanted to mention, you know, another option that the database that we enter our books into as we're kind of processing them in our library. There are 40, no, actually there's 60 now, 60 other libraries that use this database around the country, other Living Books libraries. So that just has, you know, titles, information on books. So our members automatically have access to that database, but we also have a membership if people aren't able to loan books, loan out books from us, they can just access the database for a nominal fee. And, you know, that's really great for people that are trying to build their home library. If you just, you want access, about 40,000 titles in there that have been vetted by all these libraries to say, we believe these are living books.
Yeah, we consider that like a big piece of value that comes with the membership, because that way, you know, you've got birthdays to buy for, Christmas to buy for, or you've got people wanting to buy books for your kids. You can, you know, build your own list that way.
And we use that a lot in the beginning as we were, books were coming to us, those 3,000 books that fell into our lap at the same time. You know, in the beginning, we kind of cross-referenced the database a lot. Are these okay? Are these not? And eventually, you know, we built up enough confidence to kind of discern that on our own. But
it can still be our first line of vetting to, you know, we go out to the thrift stores a lot and it's like, oh, well, quick check. I don't know this author. Let's see. Are they in the system? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's a really, really nice resource too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really fascinated by this this box of books idea. And you mentioned, what's that? No, and seriously, because you mentioned that there's this idea that there might be one kind of anchor book, and then there are other associated books around it. So these are like intentionally sort of curated to be able to, I don't know, help foster and nurture an interest in a topic and then cover it in a way that's kind of holistic. I mean, it sounds brilliant. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. And we actually, we bought the book lists that go in these boxes. So it wasn't our original idea, but they're based off of a homeschool curriculum, a literary based homeschool curriculum called Five in a Row. That was, it was written in the 90s,
yeah,
I believe. So the theory is, or I guess the process is, so in each box, say for the preschool age, it is Goodnight Moon is kind of the main book that you read. And so through this curriculum, you read the main book, Goodnight Moon, 5 days in a row. And then after you read that book, you can explore some of the topics that are in there, you know, talk about bedtime, talk about the moon and the stars, and, you know, can throw some science in there and maybe, you know, counting and whatnot. So someone put together, Michelle Howard, who is our library consultant, we do have one of those. She actually put these lists together and took the Five in a Row curriculum and matched another book with each theme. So we've kind of used those to put together. So it's not quite a unit study, but it is, the books all kind of go together as you're learning. And so the thought is, after you know, that week of reading about all these supplemental books to do with Goodnight Moon, when your child reads, or when you read Goodnight Moon with your child on that fifth day, they have this much broader understanding of all the things in the book. So we have that for elementary age as well.
And they cover like very vast topics. We've got books that are related to historical periods, mm-hmm. Geographical periods, just picture books in general that, you know, may have an animal theme or colors or shapes that are their main thing. And so you really do have the opportunity to cover a lot of different themes within each of those. Yeah.
And the box obviously goes along with the curriculum, but we believe they also stand alone just to read to your kids, mm-hmm. and you're going to cover a vast diverse types of information.
Well, and Rebecca's had the experience, and we've certainly heard from other moms, homeschooling moms especially, that have a broad range of ages, that, you know, having something for the little kids, especially so that they can feel included and part of the school day. I know Rebecca has done it where it's like the first 10 or 15 minutes of the day, she's like, okay, to the littles, go get one, you know, go get the one book we're going to read right now. And they spend their first
bit of time. That's basically my kindergarten and preschool curriculums for, I don't know how long. They have their own box every month, and that's how we start a school day. Go get your box, pick out whatever book you want out of that box, and we'll sit on the couch and we'll read it.
But it's, you know, it's building the enthusiasm, it's building the just love of learning that comes mm-hmm. with it, and just the ownership and the confidence. And
because they're all living books, I can't tell you how many times, I mean, even down to the preschool books, and they're topics I know about, but I'll be reading this book and I get inspired. There was one about dandelions that I was like, oh my gosh, I've never appreciated a dandelion before. We need to go outside and, you know, look at this a little differently. Like, it literally shifted my view on this weed, this annoying weed that had been in my yard my whole life. And that was out of a preschool box. So it actually fills me up too, to start my day with those. And it's doable because they're short, they're simple, they're picture books. It feels successful and inspiring for all of us. So
I want to connect something that you just shared there about reading to your little ones, back to what something Amanda shared at the beginning, which was reading aloud with the 15 and 16 year old at home. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering two things. The first is like the gift that is in your family. Like what a gift. I want to hear a little bit more about the gift, because of course we understand and appreciate, let's sit down and watch a movie together, or let's sit down and watch this video together or this show together. But the idea of sitting down and engaging different powers, capacities, and having like a parent, or even taking turns reading a book out loud, that is something that I think that very few of the folks that are part of our program right now actually have ever experienced. And so just talk a little bit about, if someone ever wanted to say, I want to try that, help set them up for success, whether it's the book they would choose, time of day, day of the week, a setting to have, like, how do you help someone bridge from zero to one in that reality of reading a book out loud with your kids?
So I am lucky. I grew up with my mom reading aloud to us a lot. Maybe not into our teen years, but definitely up through the middle grades. I still have very vivid, fond memories of, you know, draped all over, my brothers and I draped all over the living room while she read all of the little house books. And a favorite of hers were Albert Payson Terhune. He writes these great stories about dogs and on farms. And so I kind of grew up just with that. And so when I found myself at the point where I knew my kids needed that love of story, and I also have to give credit to Sarah McKenzie in the Read Aloud Revival. She was really instrumental in showing me that it was okay to just read books to my kids and know that they were getting more than just listening to my voice out of it. But I would say, you know, finding a series, if you're starting from nothing, find a series. And if you've got a wide range of kids, you know, you will have to be maybe a little more discerning on that. The little house books are always a good a good choice to start with, because there's just so many lovable characters in there and so much adventure, and you can relate to it as a little kid and also as you get older. But I definitely, I know that it's hard for some people in seasons of life to actually put that time to sit for an hour a day. But you could even start less than that, you know, do a 10 or 20 minute read.
Yeah. And it's kind of finding to the time when, you know, you've captured the kids' attention. And one other, I guess, bridge to start that would be audiobooks in the car. That was, we've had seasons of life where I have not been able to consistently read out loud to my kids. Maybe the picture book, sure, in the morning, but to my older kids. So when they're all captive in the car, you know, we'll try to do that. Currently, I've been reading to my kids while they eat breakfast in the morning. So
I was just going to say,
we homeschool. Yeah,
I did that a lot at lunch times, which I didn't ever really think of before. But I went to a silent retreat one time and they did table reading, which I guess they do in seminaries a lot and in monasteries. And so I would just do a table read where I'm reading while they're eating. And then I had them all there and they were captive and they were paying attention. And yeah, so that's another good way.
Yeah. And then with our teenagers, since they have gone off to school, I guess just be patient, and a little bit goes a long way. We attempted The Hobbit as a family. We started last February and took, 9 months in, and we're like a quarter of the way through the book. But I was trying, okay, once a week, can we just sit down as a family? And, you know, we let the little kids color, do their crafts. I think some of the older kids were even doing some homework, but, you know, we were all in the same room. My husband was there too. We take turns reading. It was just such a cool bonding. And it is hard to find, you know, with a larger family with, you know, I have kids 17 down to 16 months, to find something to do with everybody. I mean, even board games sometimes, it's just hard with that age range. So I have found, if you can find the right book or the right incentive, I guess, for the family, to sit down and listen, that's been enjoyable. And it really, you know, it helps bond your family. You know, you've got those inside jokes from those books and you kind of have those characters that everyone's reading about. And that's been kind of neat over the years as well. And it motivates me to keep working at it, even though it's not perfect in all seasons of life.
I thought it was super sweet. Rebecca was telling me about how she did feel like she just wasn't getting to read to the big girls very often. And so around the Thanksgiving, Christmas time,
just crawled into bed with at night when they were getting ready for bed. I'm like, we're going to read a book. I found a really cool picture book about Thanksgiving. And I sat with my high school, I did it with both of them separately. And I just, they're like, wow, that was a really good book, Mom. It's like, yeah, but it was a picture book. I mean, I didn't have much,
but it was short.
Time to read much more than that in their attention span. So
yeah.
Just, I would just encourage families to keep trying new things, to keep persevering and know that
even a little bit it's going to make an impact.
That's beautiful. I love those stories. I want to thank you both, folks. If you've enjoyed listening to Rebecca and Amanda today, please go to twoacrebooks.com. Two Acre Books, and that's T-W-O, twoacrebooks.com. And you can learn a lot more about their lending library. You can make a visit. You can sign up for a membership. There's different levels and ways of being involved. And again, folks, if you're in the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene corridor, or in range of that, that's a huge gift to you to be able to go visit their two different locations down on the South Hill of Spokane, as well as in Dalton Gardens, just right there in the northeast section of Coeur d'Alene. So ladies, I want to thank you both so very much for being with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so for much, having Mom. Us.
All right. God bless you all.
God bless you.
God bless.
Well, that was a wonderful interview with Amanda Downing and Rebecca Miller. I really appreciate them coming on and taking time to share with us a beautiful initiative. And I'll tell you, as someone who is attempting to raise kids in the faith, and not just that, but form them to know how to think, how to learn, and how to love learning, reading plays such a critical role. And reading living books, great books, the classics of Western literature, are a powerful way of, again, not just giving them access to books that have been identified as great, but books that can have a real impact on forming the mind. How do I see things?
how do I think about things? What are the attitudes I should have in my heart? And then even and again, inspiring me as living books can to be able to be a person of virtue. So a beautiful thing that they're doing at 2 Acre Books. So 2acrebooks.com, T-W-O, 2acrebooks.com is a place where you can learn how to become a member. You can subscribe and become a member and get access to that wonderful, not only the physical libraries, but also that online resource as well. So a lot of wonderful gifts that can come from that. All right. I hope and pray that you've been blessed by the program. Join me on Monday for more of Sound Insight.